This show is not for the easily offended, so if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back to Indie Comic Book Noise, everybody. It's episode 604. We're back live. We've posted all the backlog episodes, so this one hopefully will be fairly contemporaneous. And it's
not all the backlog episodes, really, just like the ones we've recorded recently.
Yeah.
The other ones are lost to time.
That's what I meant. I meant the ones that that we recorded while we were figuring out the website. But mm-hmm. those, contact the show if you do want the old ones. Between Kevin and I, we have most of them.
I thought they were lost forever.
No, I didn't post them because it was just a bunch of work, and I kind of decided that, you know, we don't, if someone wants something, we'll go dig it up. But having all that on there was a lot of work for me to do. Mm-hmm. And I am Andrew the LA Rabbit. And it's just two of us, me and Phil. Say hi, Phil.
Hello. Just two of us is normal, though. I think me and you have done the most duo shows.
Yes. Andy. Yeah. Kevin and I had a few weird series where it was the two of us, but they were always weird. That's when
you were
stuff.
Doing that bad book. Yeah, I forget what it was.
Two idiots talking. Yeah, we had that whole thing. And then we did a bunch of Thunderbolts on our own. But yeah.
But that's Marvel. I mean, just for indie.
Yeah. This is Indie Comic Noise. The problem is I've been doing the old patter for so long, Phil. This is the new indie, which is run by all of us. Derek set everything up and then wound down the Deliberate Noise Network and graciously allowed us to take over. So that's why we've been, I thank everyone for their patience while we got everything back, but the website's running, we're posting to iTunes. Hopefully we'll have everything going forward. Cause he's not here, I can slag on him a little. I was kind of expecting Kevin to provide more IT support. So I ended up doing more IT than I wanted to, Phil.
Well, I think I saw a second episode come up. So they're looking good now.
Yeah. And I'll post the other one before that one's getting posted in a few days, but we're recording this ahead of time to keep it all together. But anyways, Indie Comic Noise, we just chill out and talk about indie comics and everything else related to it. You can check out the website, indiecomicnoise.com, for old episodes. And like I said, if you miss some old episode, contact Kevin or I. One of the two of us usually have the old episodes. I mean, we don't have the ones from before we took over the show, though. Those are gone.
No, but that makes sense. Yeah. Those belong to someone else.
Yeah. I want to say it's been at least a decade we've been doing the show. I should probably formally figure it out. So we've been hosting for a long time, but it did exist before us. And those episodes, I don't know if you can find Bruce or Derek or someone might have it, but I don't think anyone's going to go looking for those. It was an episode 16 years ago where you guys talked about some whatever, but yeah. Okay. So we're on Blue Sky with our Sister Show Marvel account. Kevin runs that. I think there's a Facebook, but I'm not on Facebook and I'm not on X, but I think we have accounts there too. But anyways, it's just the indie show where we talk about whatever, and had to get Phil on because I've been fighting for years till one of these many streaming services I had showed Bloodshot, the movie.
Okay, because I was going to say, because you swore you would not spend over $1.
No. Well,
so you didn't.
Yeah, I pay for all these dumb things. What's weird is here in the United States, not sure what it's like in Canada or the rest of the world, Disney took over Hulu. But some of the Hulu properties aren't allowed on Disney Plus. So when you look for Bloodshot on Disney Plus Hulu, it won't show up. I had to go to Hulu itself, even though they're the same because of some weird license rules. So it was just frustrating because we only have the Disney Plus app on the TV. So I was looking and it's not there. And I'm like, but I pulled it up on the computer earlier. And you have to go to the Hulu app. But I did watch Bloodshot. Now, you've seen the Bloodshot movie, right, Phil?
Yeah, but I don't remember much of it. And there's no way in hell I was going to rewatch it with you.
It's okay. A couple things. It's too long. Can we say that?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really get the appeal of Vin Diesel.
I hate Vin Diesel. The only thing I like him in is the Pitch Black series.
I'm not a Fast and Furious guy.
I mean,
I've seen some of them, but they don't work for me. But so that's a big overcome, because I think the plot's pretty good, because it's the.
I remember too. It had that slick scene at the beginning, the Psycho Killer song or whatever. Like,
yeah,
some nice touches to
it. Yeah, yeah. It's got the basically the plot is, for those of you that don't know, this is Bloodshot, the Valiant character, who has a bunch of nanites in his system, and basically they do the reveal. You think it's being told from the beginning, where he's just a soldier who gets killed in the line of duty and then resurrected through this miracle treatment. But when he was killed, the bad guy killed his wife. And then you find out that he's just being used by the evil company, and they've been wiping his mind every time and reimplanting a different bad guy for him to go kill. So every time someone different kills his wife and they wipe his memory and restart. I'm like, well, that's a good plot. Like, it has those twists in it, but there were just so much bloat to it. And I really felt like they turned Bloodshot into Superman as well. So there was no sense of danger at all. I mean, he's an action guy, but he just, you know, you could hit him with grenades and bullets and all. And there was no, I would have liked, I know it's kind of corny, but maybe a weakness. Originally, they were like, he has to have the nanites recharged. But they didn't do anything with that in the final script.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, like, he was running out of power and dies. And then the good guys revive him, his friends that he developed, the friends he made along the way.
And why not make him look like Bloodshot
yes.
the whole movie, you know? Like, it's the easiest special effects you yes. could ever do. Like, what? Just make him look like the character. The second you make him not look like that easy character to make, then it's, you know, it's already over.
Yes, I agree. I think the pale albino look and kind of otherworldly.
With the red dot.
Yeah. With
that red dot too, yeah.
And it would have improved. And like I said, give him, because they made it so that not only was he physically invulnerable, but his nanites could hack every computer in the world and everything. So
yeah.
The only thing they could do is they could override his commands if they injected him with a thing. And that was his one weakness. But it was pretty, yeah. But the action yeah. scenes were decent. Like, it starts with him as a regular soldier shooting bad guys, and then
for
some
me,
of
he
the
should,
effects.
For me, he should feel more like the Punisher than like a superhero that could take grenades and everything, like you were saying.
Yeah, yeah, like he
feel more like
yes,
that
to me. Like, he gets shot and stuff, but not, he would just walk in and let them shoot him. Like I said, just like Superman in some of those mm-hmm. movies, where he just doesn't really care that they're firing all the guns at him and everything, because it doesn't have any impact. But because in the opening scene, he's kind of tactical and dodging and smart, and then but in the once he gets Bloodshot, he just walks into things and doesn't try and dodge, you know what I mean? He stops mm-hmm. with that. And yeah, so some of the dialogue is just hard. You need, like, Guy Pearce is good, but yeah. Vin Diesel, the like
he
his
yeah he sucks.
There were three other superpowered individuals that are in on it, and one of them flips to his side. And it's the woman, KT, and she does well in the action and stuff, but, and she's a decent actress, but they give her these corny lines, and you're like, you need top, like Ewan McGregor or something, to deliver these kind of lines, because mm-hmm. some of those scenes were just painful with her and Vin trying to figure things out or whatever.
And this is supposed to launch a big cinematic yeah, universe, too.
It was just frustrating, because I could see the bones of a good movie in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was just kind of sad about it, I think, with the, like you say, make him look like Bloodshot, maybe less dialogue with Vin. I don't know. He just doesn't, him figuring out stuff is not credible to me as a viewer. And I just don't think he has the screen charisma. I mean, I watch plenty of Arnie movies. He's not a great actor, but he's got, when he's on the screen, he's kind of funny.
Movies were fun at the time, but he's not a, like, you can watch him today.
Yeah. And he kind of put a smile, or Charles Bronson does the dumb, tough guy thing that was pretty well in, like, the some of those movies. But yeah, I guess Vin was the hardest overcome for me a bit. And then the script dialogue. Yeah, you just need to not have them have that much. And sometimes they would linger on stuff. Like when he goes through the Bloodshot reboot process. I felt the effects were okay, but just cut the sequence down. It doesn't look that, it's not worthy of a 3-minute sequence, or however long the sequence was. Maybe like cut it in half, or just those kind of trims where I know he spent a bunch of money on CGI robots and stuff, but less of that is more for me, Phil. It unless you're really laugh. Yeah,
it makes me laugh that you were obsessed of seeing this movie, that it stuck with you so long that you actually accomplished your goal. And why, Andrew, why?
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was gonna be too, but
no, but still, it's not,
it's not good.
It's not,
I'm not gonna recommend it, but I just think that unless you're James Cameron, or like spending real Peter Jackson, one of the guys that has special effects as their thing, keep those things to a minimum. They just don't, they're not, they don't look well, they age, they're never gonna, or if it's essential, like you're making the Venom movie and you need all this tentacle, that I get, but weird, you know, the computerized arms and stuff and all that, just limit that as much as you can. Yeah. It doesn't age well.
All they had to do was paint him white, put a red sticker on his chest, and just have him shoot terrorists or something, you know?
Yeah, well, I keep the same plot. I'm cool with the, you know, the evil corporation. He doesn't know he's a sucker for it and all that. That was fine. Also, these films desperately need humor usually. And the humor, there were a few like small dick jokes about one of the geek guys. And I was like, that's, I guess that's funny. I don't know. Because the joke is Philly has a small penis. Are you laughing at? I can make more jokes about it. They had like 3 or 4. And so he wants to get enhanced so he can get a bigger penis, but he's too embarrassed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you laughed, Phil. Thought it was funny.
Well, no, not with the same reasons.
So, yeah, that was the Bloodshot movie. Not terrible, but not good. Needed another few passes. And maybe they were
going to watch it a few more times.
No, I mean, they needed to send the script through, trim a few things, take out some Vin's bits.
Yeah.
Maybe get to the Bloodshot stuff sooner.
It was bad for the indie movie market for sure.
No more Valiant Cinematic Universe, but
no,
it's kind of a shame
he never existed anyway.
He was, I guess he was probably the easiest to do because you're right. It would have been some white makeup. And other than that, it's an action movie. It's not like you got flying characters
or to be. Yeah. All right. Then maybe at the end, introduce Exo Manowar, you know?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I can see why they wanted to avoid that. That probably would have felt like an Iron Man ripoff. In a way.
Well, no, because they were supposed to do all of them in movies.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to start just this
one failed.
With Exo, because then you feel like, oh, they're just ripping off Marvel, you know? But guy in an armored suit.
Yeah, I think they consider that the flagship character, though.
I think so, too. But I could see how, imagine you're just a regular moviegoer and you go see it, and you're like, oh, wow, a comic book guy that builds a suit of armor, has a suit of armor that gives him all his things to start your cinematic universe.
The way you make it different, though, is, and not feel like Iron Man, is you start it off in space because that's where the armor comes from, right?
Yeah.
Even have it like a space film, like without even it being on Earth at first.
I guess. I just think I see why they didn't want to start with that. It would have felt, I think too many people would have been, especially if it, you know, say it was good but not great, everyone would have been like, oh, it's just a bad Iron Man. You know, it's, you got to be careful about biting off more than you can chew.
But I guess that's the whole thing about Valiant, though. You got a bad Iron Man, you got a bad Punisher, you just got a bad X-Men, you know what I mean? That's just Valiant. Oh, God, it's good thing Kevin's not here.
Trashing him, trashing his favorite properties. We're the worst. Well, the other reason we had
to give it a shot.
We had to get on here was a recent Kickstarter came in, and I've been solely behind on your man's main title, but I did read this one, but I haven't read the stack of the other ones. So we're talking Furious Monkey Fist Comics, and that's
my favorite indie company.
Yeah. The creators of Horse Femmes. What I like is it's Stuart Black who does everything, lettering and all that, like coloring.
Oh, yeah, it's just him. He just does everything himself. Yeah.
And his most recent Kickstarter was Savage Hannah number one. And so what's nice is I'm coming into this cold. Like I have those other issues, I just haven't gotten to them yet. Yeah. And I thought he did a really great job of just inside blurb tells you everything you need to know about the character. And I'm like, this is perfect.
And you really don't need any of that stuff anyway. Like you can just, this could be your first Savage Hannah. Cause even me, I haven't reread the end there. So like the other story she's in yet. And I don't remember at all or anything. Like she was just kind of more of a side character, right? So.
Yeah. I just thought having that little blurb on the inside cover was perfect. Mm-hmm. It's one paragraph, tells you everything you need to know. She's a super powered character who went through this bad experience and is taking a step back in her career to kind of refocus and recover from being possessed. So perfect. And then it just jumps right into this story. I also appreciate, I feel like Black is trying to go back to a bit more compressed storytelling. Like a lot happens in this issue. I don't know. It feels like it's thicker than a regular issue, but
it is. They're like over 50 pages always, like a lot of the time.
But I feel like he's a throwback in a way of trying to get a lot done and tell and move the story forward.
Yeah.
I also appreciate his sort of modern coloring, but throwback to the old days. So you have a lot more color options, and there's some gradations and stuff, but he's not doing it like a modern coloring where so much of the illustration lifting is done in the coloring. You know what I mean, Phil? You look at the line art and it's a few buildings and you realize that everything is done kind of with the colors. And I like the more approach to traditional, for me, comic book coloring and some of the background stuff. So I thought, oh, this is good. It's like, felt like this could have come out.
I kind of like it. It's because, it's a little different than what I'm usually reading, right?
Yeah, so. I feel like this could have come out in, like, 89 or something. You know what I mean? And it would have fit right
it's
in.
It's my decade.
You know, late 80s, early 90s would have been a perfect. And I will say the pacing and scripting, he likes some humor. Sometimes it works for me, sometimes it doesn't, but I don't mind it. You know, the kind of snappy patter. The
his
comics
humor is
made familiar.
Best in Four Horsemen. That's where his best humor is on, for sure. Now, I am glad that he didn't make this nudie comic like the last series that we kickstarted.
Oh, see, I have all these and I need to read them. So there is it's a little cheesecakey, but not even AC Comics level. Like, you know, they're women in somewhat revealing outfits, but it's not like it's all boobs and butts the whole comic.
And I love how he's playing with different genres a bit now. Like his next Kickstarter is a Western one with four, I think it's either the Four Horsemen or the Four Horsemen that are going back, or Plan B, if you want to call them that, into like, maybe they're going back in time or something like that. But it's a Western. And this one plays with the fantasy one.
Yes.
She goes to like get stuck in a fantasy world.
Yes. Basically, our heroine, as they laid out, had been through this bad experience. So she's super powered, but she's taking a step back because she got possessed and hurt people. And she has a kind of kinetic based power where the faster she moves, the more energy she generates. And she's just working as a street agent. And we have a D&D type world where a guy steals a gem from a big bad organization, well, cult or whatever, like, you know, but a D&D sense. And then he ends up in her world, which is modern day Australia. And then when she mixes it up, she gets transported back to his world, which is D&D world, and falls in with a magician thief who, you know, has skills, but also gets into trouble. But the classic D&D thief to me, the type where, you know what I mean? They're always stealing things and kind of getting caught, but also able to get away.
One of the cool things about this issue, too, is, you know, when they're in like the bar or whatever, and she's showing her the different
groups,
types of people there. Yeah. One of them had like the kangaroo masks.
Yes.
That's because I'm guessing, I don't know if it was in one of his comics or if it's just maybe it happens in the background. But that's Killaroo.
Oh, yes. I think
Australian. Yeah.
Probably. I bought a bunch of those comics when I went to Australia.
So I think you do. Yeah.
But this was 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, glad Killaroo is still going.
Because Killaroo crosses over a few times. Or there's two big one-shots. Killaroo and not the horse femme, but the guy versions that cross over with them. And then he also has like an appearance in horse femme here and there. Like just on a panel maybe or something.
So Savage Hannah's problem is, she thinks it's the crystal was the trigger. So her and the thief are going to collect the crystals to get back to her world. But at the same time, they're being hunted by the people that the thief was in because they want the crystals too. So that drives it, and it takes place over quite some time. And like I said, it felt, you know, there's a lot that goes on in this issue, including the final conflict with the big bad where she is able to trigger going back to the, you know, flipping between universes.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out it's through her and defeats the big bad. Yeah. I don't know. I was like, oh, this is fun. I like the art.
Yeah.
I like the pacing.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. My one complaint, though, is because it was jumping around so much, it felt like it was missing maybe a line of dialogue sometimes, I thought, maybe. Like, it really jumped from scene to scene sometimes.
Yes, it did. I didn't mind that. For me, maybe a few less one-liners, like they usually work, but I don't know. Even sometimes Spider-Man can get on my nerves with, it's hard, I think, to do that kind of witty dialogue all the time. So a lot of times, and that's my personal preference, I just dial it back a little, but I'm very excited to get into all the other of his comics that I already own.
Yeah, because I was worried about the last Kickstarter, because to me, that was, I love everything he's done, Stuart Black, but the last Kickstarter, that three-parter, that's the weakest out of it all for me.
Okay, yeah, I have that.
So I was worried that you were going to read that, and it was just going to throw you off, you know. I still like that, but it's not what I love about the rest of his stuff.
I mean, it would be not, I mean, I don't know. I wish he had, not that I have any problems with the lettering or the coloring or anything. I just wish if he had someone to help him out. I wonder if that would help him. I mean, he does crank these out. Don't get me wrong.
Well, he cranks these out, yeah.
But like, I wonder if he had, you know, one other partner or whatever, if that would really take some of the workload off.
The problem is, I don't think he's well known enough or anything. Like, I wish Image was publishing his stuff by now, you know? Like, I feel like it deserves to be, like...
Oh, yeah.
I wish it was more well known, you know? Like, more... I wish more people knew this comic and were... But it's hard when, you know, he comes from Australia. He doesn't really advertise a lot or anything like that.
Well, so I think that's the other problem, though, Phil, because he's doing all this and he's also the publisher.
He doesn't have the time, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot on his plate. And I feel like, oh, it would be nice if he could, like you say, partner with, I don't know, Mad Cave or a smaller company just to, who could just take that, you know, do quick copy editing, format it, knock it out for the American market or whatever.
Or just reprint his stuff, remaster a bit maybe if needed, you know?
Yeah. I think it would fit right in with any of those. Reminds me, I mean, because of the D&D thing, but like Steve, that Babs comic from Aftershock.
Yeah, I have that. Yeah. I've only read the first issue so far.
Like, I feel like it could fit right in with whatever company. Except I think it's whoever is putting that out, that type of publisher.
It was the one that did that. Was it Ahoy, maybe?
Yeah, that's it. Ahoy. They're another publisher. But that level of, like, it's a solid publisher. give them something new to put out and help. Because I think just taking the administrative stuff off his plate and allow him to focus more on making the comics would be good. Because I've been I'm going to keep backing all his Kickstarters, but he does seem so, his updates kind of break my heart. They seem so sad and like it's never working out or whatever. And I feel bad.
Well, it's because he really doesn't like doing that admin stuff, like you say, you know, like he just wants to draw the comics, you know, I think make the comics. But I think it's a lot of stress, you know, to get everything mailed out and all that kind of stuff. But he's very good at it because it comes fast. He doesn't charge a lot. Like, it's cheap, you know? Like, you're not paying as much as some of those other Kickstarters.
I definitely feel like he's in it for love of the game. You know, he wants to make the comics. That's what's getting him going.
Mm-hmm. And like I say, I'm probably his biggest fan. I love his stuff.
No, I'm hoping... Depending on, I'll see if his Kickstarter, if he has a landing page or whatever, and I'll put that in the show notes for the next one.
Well, yeah, he has a store he sells everything. You can get like all the old issues that but he ships it from Australia, so you may have to pay a bit more for shipping kind of thing, you know? But when I first got into it, I got a lot of stuff from him that way. And also, I ordered it from that, what's that company
Indie Planet.
Called? Indie Planet. And also there, I ordered a bunch of stuff from there at first.
No,
but that's also expensive.
Yeah.
It's print on demand.
Yeah, that's what I was, some kind of setup with something. I think it would be fun, like you say. Because then also they would just handle all that part of it, all the admin stuff. Take it off.
And the first three issues are free on Indie Planet Digital for anyone that does want to try it, the first three issues.
Okay, I'll drop a link in the show notes too and figure out how that is. Assuming I can figure that stuff out again, Phil. Well, if we're going throwback feel, I have the first two issues. I don't know if you're... Are you reading the Terminal book from Image?
I have not read the second issue, but thanks for reminding me. I'm going to read it tonight. I'm going to pick it up digital. But I did read the first issue.
That's the Robert Kirkman, Joe Casey, and Andy Kubert.
And they were describing this as the new, like, Invincible and 90s X-Men. That's how they were advertising this.
I definitely more get the 90s X-Men vibe from it. And appreciate that it's a lot of just crazy characters thrown in. But as I talked about in a recent episode, I love that he puts the little heads and the names in the inside cover.
Oh, yeah, he does do that. Yeah, that's right.
And that's key
but that's
for
the
me.
First. But when I read those names, I was like, oh, that's a kind of not. I feel like they didn't put a lot of work into it. You know?
No, I mean, they're kind of crazy goop, but that's part of the 90s go atmosphere to it that I think they do well. But it's basically a story of two opposing teams. And one team is sort of evangelical about this contact from this weird giant eyeball. And the other is the opposing team. So we're going to, that's the X-Men feel, you know, the traditional Professor X versus Magneto. And we're going to find out, I'm sure, you know, it's made to look like the one team or the better team. But I think, you know, as we go forward, the Activators were kind of centered on him. But I think we're going to see stuff from the Awoken's perspective, too, and sort of put them. That's part of that 90s, too. There aren't really any good guys. They're just two teams against each other in a way. But I'm enjoying the fast pace of it all. That's what I really like, throwing them together.
You know what it reminds me a lot of? You know that Straczynski or that book Rising Sun or something like that?
It was a Midnight Sun one, I remember.
No, this was what's that guy's name? Is it J.R. Straczynski or something like that? Who's that comic book writer?
JMS? Michael Straczynski?
No. Yeah. But he did this one book where it was kind of like a bad Superman or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I forget the name.
J. Michael Straczynski. Yeah. No, you're right. That is Rising Stars. I was thinking...
Rising Stars, that's it.
He did Midnight Nation, which I really liked.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, I like that. But yeah, this book kind of reminded me of that kind of a bit. like the style and everything, you know? Not like the story, but the style.
And I like when Joe Casey's just kind of over the top and silly. I feel like his comics can be a lot of fun when he's embracing
that. Sometimes too goofy, though.
Yeah. Well, I did. Speaking of, Amazon Prime has his Officer Down movie. Did you ever see that?
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. It's a pretty...
It's a cartoon?
No, it's a live action movie.
Really?
Yeah. But it feels very cartoony, and it's done super over the top.
I did like that comic.
Yeah, and it's basically filled with a lot of actors and stuff. I mean, some I know as they get further down, but like the main guy, Kim Coates, that plays Officer Down, I haven't seen him in anything. But it was really fun. I think he did it with some sort of other... because you know he had made all that Man of Action stuff. Mm-hmm. They did the Ben 10, the cartoon for kids and everything. This is not for kids. This is R rated. But I think that gave them the license to do this kind of thing, and it's fun. I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to see it in the theater because it's a little over the top and a little silly. But it's perfect to throw on as like a background type of thing. But yeah, if you want people blowing up, and it's similar to Bloodshot, actually, in that, you know, they keep rebooting Officer Down.
Don't say that.
Well, I meant the plot of like a super creature who gets rebooted and is sacrifices his personal to be the bad, to be the hero type of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think, I don't know them, but I think some of the Slipknot guys might have been involved or something like that, because there's a circle of bad guys that all have animal heads that do the scene and everything and talk about it. But yeah, it's very over the top, very fun, super fast paced.
Mm-hmm. But I knew that existed.
Yeah, Officer Down.
And I would have guessed it would be a cartoon if they made it.
It's as close to a cartoon as you can get with. But Down has an E on the end of it if you're searching at home, and I'll put a reference in. But yeah, it just made me laugh. I was like, oh, Joe Casey did that Officer Down movie that's on, I think it's on one of those. Like, yeah, I said, I buy a bunch of the streaming things, so I have it there. And it's from 2016, so I don't think it made $1 million or anything. So hopefully easy to get, like Bloodshot. Officer Down. Yeah.
What did that have to do with Terminal again?
Oh, Joe Casey. Oh, yeah. So Joe Casey is writing Terminal, and he also worked on Officer Down. I guess it's his character.
Well, he's one of the writers of Terminal, right? Isn't there multiple?
Kirkman's the other one. But I don't know. I haven't read any interviews, so I don't know the breakdown, if it's one of these projects where Kirkman's like, okay, here's the doing the Stan Lee thing where he just kind of lays out a pitch and then goes crazy.
I'm guessing they go on a Zoom call together, you know, talk for a couple hours, just hashing out ideas, and then Casey does most of the work.
I would think. But the giant eyeball creature that shoots out of his head felt very Casey.
That's Kirkman.
Oh,
I was going to think Kirkman.
Oh, man, Casey.
I guess it could be both.
Because it's just so... you're never going to see that in the real world, right? Very in engaging with the comic book format in the appropriate way. But
that is one of the things I liked, actually, was that the eyeball, like its whole origin.
Yeah. Yeah. And it feels like, oh, we're going to jump right in and embrace, especially in this era now where, because the movies are such big business sometimes, and this isn't a problem with indie, more with Marvel and DC, where the comics feel more muted, like they want to mimic what's in the movies a little sometimes, where this feels like we want to go back to what makes comics crazy and fun.
It didn't grab me yet in the first issue, though, so I'm curious about what you thought of the second issue.
Oh, it feels like it just picks right up. I wonder how much of this, if they had a bunch of it laid out. I mean, you get more of the aftermath of the twist ending in the first one. Mm-hmm. part of this process.
Yeah, I did like it. Yeah.
But when you go through the transformation process, it can go good or it can go fatal. And yeah. So it's a fallout from the negative parts. And like I said, we're right now kind of centered on the activators. And so the one person who put her sister into the program and the sister dies is pretty upset and fights with the team. Again, feels very 90s, like just punches out one of her teammates and that type of thing.
Now, one of the things I got from it, which I'm sure everyone did, is that it felt like you didn't know who the good guys were or the bad guys almost.
I think we're supposed to definitely have that ambiguity. I think because we're centered on the activators, I think we're, and in the first one, the Awoken is the one that killed an activator. I think we're supposed to side more with the activators. And they're the ones with with the giant eyeball and all that.
But then I kind of was switching a bit. I found maybe these aren't the good guys.
And then the giant eyeball sends them on a mission and they end up running into the other team. And then there's a big fight, and then it ends with the fight is not finished, but it ends with a creepy scene at the end, and we're going to find out. Plus a promotion for I mentioned that they did a secret tie-in of Tomb Raider and G.I. Joe, but they're putting out a series. I don't know if it's a one-shot or limited or what, but G.I. Joe Tomb Raider. Comic.
Oh, okay.
For both
of them. Like a whole series, yeah.
It looks Kyle Higgins and Elena Casagrande. So what I don't know is how long is it running? Is it just an issue, 10 issues, ongoing, whatever? But I doubt ongoing. But hey, it's something to look out for. That was in the issue 2 ad section. I was like, oh, I thought it was just going to be in G.I. Joe. But it makes smart to give her own thing. That way, if any of those movies or TV shows come out, there's a comic right there.
Yeah, and it's not her first series. I've never been interested in her series, though, as comics.
I mean, I watched some of the reboot movie. I think it was a fine action movie. Like, I don't remember any of it.
Like, I like the new games. I have fun with them. But as comic-wise, yeah, not so much. But I do feel like her and G.I. Joe's a good pair-up.
Yes. Natural, makes sense. Oh, and you'll be proud of me, Phil. I did not buy Image Collected the mask. All the bits out of their free comic book day Energon Universe thing and put it in a comic. And I grabbed it and I flipped through and I'm like, wait, I read all this. So I didn't buy it, Phil.
But aren't you collecting that universe though?
Yeah, but I already have all that stuff. All they did was I don't know if you've read any of those Energon things, but they're like little stories from each of the comics.
My trades came with at least the Transformer stories.
Yeah. So they just pulled them all out and put them into a comic and sold that. But I was like, wait, I already have all this crap. So I put it back. Oh, yeah. Tell us, how are you enjoying the... So you went with the trades for the Transformers. How are you enjoying the Transformer world?
I read the first four trades and I stopped there because the artist changed and it felt like a good place to stop. I know you warned me that maybe the art wouldn't be as clean or whatever, but I actually prefer this, I think, for Transformers.
Okay. Yeah. I just thought, it's more, you can definitely like the metal kind of moves in a way that I don't know that metal. I mean, I haven't always hated that, like Spider-Man and Darth Vader's mask in comics reflect the, change their expression and stuff, which wouldn't happen. So,
and as someone who's not a Transformers fan, I found reading these four trades, which goes to issue 24. I never got bored ever, which is, I think, really good. Like, do I think this is an amazing comic and everyone's going, everyone's going crazy about this universe? No. But I had a lot of fun and I never got bored. So it was definitely a win for me.
I would say
I got mixed up a lot with who was who in the Transformers. Like,
that happened to me. That's why I wanted those little head like they did in Terminal. Just put a little blurb of who's in that issue.
That would help me, though. Like, for me, it's just a lot of gobbledygook and it doesn't even really matter to me.
No, mostly it doesn't, but it would still be nice to know. to in robot yeah. form that a lot of them really look similar.
One of the things I loved about this is how at the beginning the Bumblebee was dead. And he just has not been back, you know, which is awesome because that's usually their flagship character, right? And so I love how Bumblebee has not been a part of this at all. I'm sure they're going to wait until it's down in sales and then they'll bring him back, you know, kind of things as a big twist. But I really like how they took some big moves like that, you know, to set up this new Transformers universe.
Yeah, I think that was my other beef was because you can fix them or not fix them. I never know. Like when the spark goes out, they're dead, but it's hard to know like, oh, are they just need to be repaired or what?
Yeah, I had those thoughts too. Definitely. So it's kind of like there's no stakes almost in a way.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to know. Is he dead? Yeah. Or just.
So it's some point Bumblebee will be back, but I don't think that bugs me too much either because, that's kind of how it's always been with Transformers, I guess, right?
I'm
never really dead.
Yeah, I don't know. I think as I mentioned, when IDW was doing all the comics, I would pick one up time and again, but I don't know if they were all the same continuity or different. It was just reading it to be like, oh, robots beating each other up.
Yeah. My favorite Transformer is Starscream, so I got a lot of good Starscream stuff, so that was nice.
Oh, he's pivotal to the creation of the G.I. Joe universe in this one, Phil.
Really?
He's okay, the so one. That's
what I meant to ask you, because yeah, I kind of asked you that question, but yeah, I should have been more specific with him. So what do I need to read if I want to read that then?
He's not in a ton of it, but if you remember, G.I. Joe started with a bunch of minis.
Yeah.
And
Well, also in Transformers, Duke goes by in a plane and he says he has a past with one of the plane Transformers.
Yes.
So that got me interested.
What triggers Duke on his new path is he and his buddy run into Starscream and Starscream kills his friend and almost kills him. And so he has this hatred of all the, like in only in recently the last, I don't know, five issues or something, has he come to accept that they're two different types of robots. Like he's like, they're all bad. So, but it isn't like a long drawn out sequence or whatever. It's mostly just a very quick thing. And that's what threw him off. He was a decorated soldier and this proof of the alien throws him off. And then I think it's Hound. It's one of the Transformers teams up with Clutch on G.I. Joe and then stays with the team. And so there's a few scenes there as well. And then,
well, in Transformers comic, yeah, they grab some at one point. I'm pretty sure it's the G.I. Joe people grab them. So I'm guessing it's that guy. Yeah, I forget who it was.
And and in the Cobra continuity, they use the movie. So Cobra Commander's from Cobra Law. And they had kidnapped Megatron and experimented on him for a long time. And that's how they learned about Energon. And then Megatron escapes. And Cobra Commander sent into the world to kind of track down Energon and figure out what's going on. So that's why Megatron was gone and then shows up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's because I thought he was gone because in one of these Energon specials or whatever, it has Megatron and there's like,
yeah, he gets trained.
People have him captured or something.
Yeah, I think that's supposed to have happened. I thought that part where he has to keep fighting the armies over and over again, I thought that happened in his past.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, some of that confuses me sometimes.
Yeah, I wasn't sure of the time because they just had him like tied up in one of their bases and were kind of torturing him.
Because I thought those snake people would have been from G.I. Joe.
Yeah, I think, I thought, because aren't they kind of also part mechanical? It was weird. And they just would keep summoning them.
I just remember the guy with the snake body. Like one of the guys had a snake body.
So yeah, they tortured Megatron to get information, but the whole bit where he has to keep fighting over and over again till he finally surrenders, that I didn't think was that. But I might have gotten it wrong too. I don't. As I said, I'm not as versed in it, but that was the connection. The advent of giant robots triggers the United States to, start the G.I. Joe thing, and Cobra Commander decides to take over the world and use the Energon. So a lot of times they're running down Energon. That's the bit. And same with in the Mask comic, Matt Tracker's bad guy, Miles Mayhem, was a conspiracy guy. When he discovers the robots really are from outer space and attacking, he goes crazy and he wants to take over everything. So, yeah, it's funny how they, but the Transformers is definitely the biggest for impact, like where they destroy Seattle or Chicago. Chicago, is it? Or some city.
A few cities. Yeah. There's a few cities.
Where they just trash them all. That's pretty intense. But yeah. Yeah. I do have those first round of hardcovers. I need to do a reread of these.
Yeah. I could see myself rereading this every once in a while. Will I pick up more? Probably more Transformers eventually. But I feel like I was pretty content with these four trades. But I don't know if I'd grab anything else. Depending what, if they do other properties, maybe,
Depends.
Because I know they have the ROM comic
coming. Yeah, I grabbed the ROM one. I don't know if it's an ongoing.
Well, I think it's just a one-shot.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure, at least right now.
It read like a one-shot, but I was also like, okay. I don't, it could... It could also go on and on and on, but
you know they're going to do a series now, right? Like for sure, I imagine, or they're going to have an event with them and then do a series.
Well, I wonder how it'll do because they also got the Micronauts. They could do another like one shot type of thing with or whatever. But yeah. Oh, I'm glad you're enjoying it. All right, Phil, you got anything? I think we might quick one, but.
Go. Yeah, one more thing is in the month of September, probably when this episode comes out, every week there's a new Hellraiser one-shot.
Oh, wow.
Coming out, which I'm very excited for. And there's a video game coming out October and November.
We have
all the trade collections coming out. Like, so this is going to be a good time for Hellraiser.
Who's putting out the one-shots? Dark Horse? Or?
It's Boom.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's Boom. Yeah.
All right.
Did all the recent comics anyway.
Awesome. All right. We'll have to do a follow-up. I'm excited on that. All right. Breaking news. Phil has recently departed us, but Kevin slid in the door to give us a little chat about his con man travels. Kevin, I need some positive news. The online reports are just a bunch of negative Nellies who complain about stuff all the time. So all I've heard about the Big Fan Expo Canada show was too many people, too expensive, too crowded, too this, too that. So bring the good word on your trips. Where did you go? What show is it? I mean, I spoiled that, but set it up proper.
Well, I always ask in these types of situations, sort of like the usual, like when someone says there's outrage, and then I go, you mean like abnormal outrage or just, the regular outrage?
I think it's the regular outrage, but still, I want some stories.
None of those things are like false. Like, yeah, it's always crowded. Yeah, like it's expensive. Like the hotel prices are ridiculous in Toronto in the summer. Yeah, I mean, but that's nothing out of the ordinary.
Well, maybe not exactly the positivity I was fishing for, but still, it's something.
I mean, it's the constant evolution of Fan Expo Canada that, I commented on, was it last year or 2 years ago? Like, I can really feel like the show changing and everything. It's interesting, I guess. Like, I'm on a technical... historical level, like it's fascinating.
Like, okay, well, fascinating is not negative, so you're giving me that at least.
Like the fudge chocolate people are still there.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't hear any complaints about them.
So. like the corporate booths are there. People want to get their activations, I guess. I guess the car thing isn't a big deal. Like, they have two cars, but I don't see anyone. I don't see mobs of people checking out two cars. I mean, I guess that's an up-and-coming thing.
Maybe. Oh, at the shows, they're always here. I do think it's kind of fun to see them on the show floor. Like, they usually just park outside. And that was fine. But it's kind of fun. It would be fun to watch them, like, drive it on to the convention floor. Yeah. That's like a little extra. I mean, they're fine out front, too, because I think it gets a lot of looky-loos who see, oh, there's a show or something going on. Because I tell you, this year, it feels like there's been a show a week down here, anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how they do these cars. Like, they get, I assume they were the Japanese deco cars, but I don't really know. But they're on, like, the floor that's in between the elevators going up and the elevators going down. So it's, like, in between show floors.
Well, you must have, like, a mystery machine from Scooby-Doo, and usually there's some type of Batmobile and a Ghostbusters car.
Like, you can't really use that show floor space for something like that anymore. I mean, they decimated the food court, like, was it a year or two ago? So they could put in, like, way more Artist Alley, like, what do you call them? Not vendors? Retail space? I don't know. It's just funny because, like, on one end, like, people are probably excited that they got in because there's an extra, I don't know, 50 or 100 spots now. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, you're just adding, they're making more money from selling more booths, and then you're adding more people to that area. I was also thinking of the idea, though, like, how many people they can have on the show floor. Like, say you had 50,000 people, but everyone decides to go all on one end. Like, it's always going to be crowded. Like, maybe you could rearrange your stuff and put Artist Alley everywhere, and then you could sort of, like, spread out the people, but I don't know. There's only so much you can do, I guess. I mean, you could obviously have less vendors and have wider aisles, but I don't think that's...
No, they're never going to have less. I mean, that like you say, that's how they pay for everything.
Yeah.
And if they've maxed out the space in the convention center, off-site is an option, but it's hard. D23, the Disney one, does their big panels in the off-site, but they have to bus people over. It seems like a nightmare. I haven't been since they started doing that.
Yeah, it's sort of like, what was it? San Diego, or where was the place where they're using like a ball stadium, like to use up?
That was the D23 Expo. Okay. It was just this summer. Yeah, they've been doing it for 2 years, that two times or three. Like I said, I stopped going because it was just too expensive and too much of a hassle. But you're eating a lot of time because, like I said, you got to load onto a bus, load out, get into the stadium, find your spot. You know, I think they're. I don't think you have, like, a seat, but you have a section. And you got to get into your whatever, you know, red tier, yellow, or A or B, or however they do it.
Like, you could technically, like, there's an aquarium right beside the convention center, and then there's a ball field. So, I mean, maybe you can do something. I don't know. Or, like, if you took away all the lounges or, like, meetups and cosplay areas, I mean, you could technically find more space, but I don't think they want to do that either. So, I don't know.
And I have the cosplayers there. They're part of it. Some of them get people to show up.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they definitely have booths for, like, cosplayers and photo shoots and stuff like that. And there is, like, this huge, like, anime presence too, but it's not, but we also have, like, there's a huge Anime North Con that I feel it, like, takes some of the, like, if you really want to see that stuff, like, that's, I think that's where you would really go. And it's weird that it seems like there's way less booths selling manga, but there's way more booths selling, like, merchandise or imported stuff. But I'm like, I was broken before when they would sell, like, those little figures or whatever for $20 or $30. And now that I've seen real capsule machines, I'm just like, how is the $5 capsule thing I paid for different than the $20 or $30 item you're selling? I thought it was expensive before. Now it's just it just seems extremely expensive for me. And it must be, I guess, on some level to import it, but I don't know.
They have at the mall by us, they have those stores that are just filled with capsule machines of different types with different properties and everything. I've never paid because I think you get like a token. I don't know if you put the money in the machine or you put a money in a different machine, get tokens or
I don't how it know. Works.
But I've walked in. I mean, but it's mostly for properties, you know, because I don't keep up with anime or manga. Most of them I don't recognize, you know, for the whatever they're selling in it.
But it's not just anime and manga. Like the ones in Japan are unreal. Oh, there's Thomas the Tank Engine. And then there'll be like a burger and fries. And then you'll just find, why do they have Mr. Rogers? Or what? It's just totally random and bizarre. I feel like it's never come to that level. And it's especially capsule machines, but it'll never be. It's never like that. Usually the capsule machines are pretty boring over here, if we have any at all. I mean, we're slowly getting more of this stuff.
Mostly commercial stuff. It's not fun, weird little random horror things or whatever. It looks fairly whatever the popular anime and manga or Hello Kitty or that type of thing.
Yeah. And it's never and I would say they're probably the same price or more expensive. And like, yeah, it might be tokens or something rather than a machine that just changes your bills into coins and you just pop the coins in the machine. But yeah, it's Artist Alley. There were two artists that I'm guessing it was actual manga, but I cannot confirm. But I don't know, like this is the thing I was thinking about too. If you're a Japanese artist coming here or an American artist going there, and maybe you're just the average run-of-the-mill guy, but in that scene, you're the only one representing a whole country. Maybe people think like go rush to you because, oh my God, look, he's the one from that country. It would be a bigger deal to the people attending rather than in their home country. And then you get a big buzz. But then, you know, if they go back home, I mean, they're just a dime a dozen. Like, I don't know how much that plays into that type of thing, but it was weird seeing like original things that looked like manga artwork for sale.
Well, if they're not based here, in Canada, it's big money to get up there, right? I mean, they got a plane ticket and hotel and all that
Yeah,
stuff. That's not cheap. Plus, if you're bringing any, it's got to be so expensive to bring your books to sell. You know, because I know a lot of places, they just ship their stuff. If you have a ton of merch, but you don't want to ship, are you going to pay all kinds of charges? Probably whatever you can stuff in your suitcase.
Well, that's why it was commissions, original artwork, and then there were some sketchbooks. And the sketchbooks were like probably the most expensive sketchbooks I've seen, but maybe they're really nice. But then I really don't know who they are. Maybe they're famous. I don't know. You know how North Americans have trouble telling the difference between all the different Japanese names. They remember the title of the books before they remember. I mean, you could say that about that maybe the average comic reader too. But I think where we've adjusted to those names, even if they're not American names necessarily, better than Japanese names.
Well, so you don't know what I wouldn't know what Dave Pikey looks like, and that guy's sold more comics than probably everyone I've seen in Artist Alley put together. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's just you're not that audience or whatever, so you can't read everything.
But I did get, I did see someone there, and I don't know how they found me. That I knew, and then they gave me an outsider's perspective on the show. So hearing about it, I was like, I was really interested. They're like, it's chaotic, and I got lost, and I'm in a maze, and I've been here for 5 hours. How do you get out of here? And I was like, yeah, that sounds like the con. Like I've been totally desensitized that there's a lot of people at the show. I mean, I know when. Like to leave like Saturday afternoon when it gets too busy, and you know, I'm just used to like all the stuff.
All right, let's get some basics out of the way for people who don't know. This is Fan Expo Canada is what they call it, or Fan Expo Toronto? What is it?
No, it's Fan Expo Canada because there was only one Fan Expo to begin with, and they didn't. And yeah, there's other Fan Expos now, but they just used the city name for the other Fan Expos, and they didn't bother changing Fan Expo Canada to Fan Expo Toronto.
Okay, and this is a Friday, Saturday, Sunday show, or do they do Thursday too?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And okay. We sort of had a conversation on the show floor too about if the show needed to be 4 days. And I was just like, well, probably if that was your first time, I mean, and you're picking up commissions and you want to go experience all the stuff, I'd be like, yeah, it's definitely a 4 day show. And there are like tons of artists, almost too many artists. And it's funny when they expanded Artist Alley, it's not we got more comic book artists, it's just more people selling prints and stickers. Man, there was a lot of stickers at this show. I don't know, we don't have sticker stores, and I've rarely seen a sticker scene anywhere else. So maybe in other years there were a lot of stickers, because I know everyone like sells the prints and merchandise and all the other stuff. So it's hard for me to say, but I know I pay more attention to stickers now, so I definitely noticed stickers. And there were sticker booths exclusively with stickers, and I don't think I could say that in other years. But there was also, I feel like there's more stuff that looks like it's been printed off a 3D printer, and then more like, maybe like, what is it, like light fixtures or like wood carving, wood burning.
My YouTube algorithm is filled with people complaining about 3D printed slop at conventions.
Yes. Now. Yes. I'm sure that plays into it too. But it's funny because I remember saying, why don't people do more magnets and stuff like that for their Kickstarters? And yeah, there definitely is like at these shows more things like magnets and that whole deal. It's not hard to find customized pins and magnets and all sorts of things that everyone has. And maybe they saw someone else do it and they're like, I'm going to do that too, right? So it's interesting.
Well, also your costs are a lot less. Like it's the cost of, I don't know how much that filament for the printers costs, but I bet you it's not a lot. So if you made a mistake and made too many, it's not like you made a bunch of prints on nice paper and everything is expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure how much some of those things cost compared to each other, but it's interesting that so many people do them now. They must be hitting the or maybe they're not making any money at all and they're just like, "Oh, well, this will attract people to this other product or get their name out there." I don't really know, but there's no lack of the stuff anyways. So yeah, they had some like big name guests and things. Like I was surprised there was like a Frank Miller experience and stuff like that. But I always wonder about these things, how much of an experience it is, or are you pay all this money to go to dinner or breakfast with these people, but how much are you really gonna get out of it? I guess people enjoy it. I don't know. I mean, I don't spend time getting autographs from celebrities and that type of thing anyway, so.
I know San Diego does some of those, and I know a few people that used to do a few of them, because I think the old Artist Edition, when there was an IDW, would have some, where they would have whoever Walt Simons in there, and he would remark your edition or sign it or whatever as part of the breakfast and, you know, hang out, and they'd cap it at, I don't know, 20 people or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if someone was really engaging, it would be cool.
If you want the sketches and things like that, it's a good way to get those things remarked because you're not going to get them in a regular fashion. Plus, you know, not to be cynical, but if they're an older artist and you want whatever, that might be your shot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and the artists being, or writers, any creators really, being associated with under a banner, it just seems like the banner areas grow more and more every year, and people that used to be solo are now under a banner. I don't want to say 50% of the main artists, Ali, of the known creators are sort of known, like, I don't know, I don't want to say mainstream, but you know, like the people that usually are on the outside, they're not in the, like, the little rows. They're just, so many of them are under a banner or have someone else running their booth. That'll probably just keep on increasing, so they don't have to deal with all the logistics of being at a con and all that stuff.
Yeah, I guess. But part of the thing is meeting them. I think I told you one time I was one of the shows, it was Jim Zub or someone, his brother was minding it, and I didn't know, and so I went up. And I like it when it's someone like a volunteer where it's clearly not the artist, because I don't know what most of these guys look like. You know, it's not, I'm not there stalking them. I just wanted to get something signed or say hey or something like that.
Well, I feel like you can tell with these branded areas because they'll be like wearing not a uniform, but they'll have their money bag and something about them. You can tell like they're like working the show. So you shouldn't really confuse them for the actual artist or whoever you're going to see. I mean, I guess I should have paid more attention to the artist list. Like this year, I was just like, I don't know. I wasn't as focused on the who's getting, who's not going to be there, who they have added and everything. I saw some people that haven't been there for a while that were there. And, you know, just browse through some portfolios and stuff. You always have that idea of an interaction is going to go or how expensive someone should be. So sometimes when someone else is just looking at something, you'll just peer over their shoulder and see what's going on before you dive in yourself. Like, I didn't know how much, I don't know which volume of Spider-Gwen it is, because it's been Ghost Spider, colon, Spider-Gwen, Spider-Gwen, Ghost Spider.
The first adventure, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know which, but Ben Gall did some work on that, one of those series. So they were there, and I looked through some of the pages and I'm like, this is affordable within a range. Like, obviously, like, there's more expensive pages, right? But you know, I was under budget at that point, so I was like, I can get one of these pages. So yeah, I came away with a Spider-Gwen page. That was pretty awesome.
Whoa, that's great news. Bury the lead there. Big two art pages are, in the modern world, I feel like the price has gone up as well. It should, but it is a little crazy, I feel like.
Yeah, and then there was people, like it's always interesting, there was people you just walked up to before and they would just, you know, crank something out for you. And then now it's like they have a big lineup. Like I remember Kari Andrews doing a jam thing for me, and now it's like, whoa, he has a line and everything.
Yeah, he's big wheel now. So did you go on Thursday or you just went on Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, I went all 4 days, but I feel like I should have scheduled more or planned more. This is the same mistake I made for Toronto Comic Con in March, where I'm like, I don't know, I'm just all over the place. Well, the other thing is I went back to coming in on the Thursday and then like racing to the con, like you got to race to check in at your hotel and then race to get to the con, because like 4 p.m. is the regular entry, but 2 p.m. is like the special preview before the floor fills up with regular people. So I feel like you want to get there when the floor is not crowded.
No, it's worth whatever the sacrifice to get in there before that goes apeshit.
And because of like rising prices, I'm like, I'm just going to go get in on the Thursday instead of the Wednesday. But it is so nice going in on the Wednesday. I would have been able to complete everything I wanted to complete, because I want to go other places and then I want to go to certain food places or certain comic shops or bookstores or whatever too. So, I mean, I duck out of the con, sometimes spend too long at other places and then run back to the con before it closes, type of thing. Oh, this is interesting too. It was a, I think it was a 30th anniversary of Fan Expo Canada. I was not there when it began, but they announced to, was it the Friday maybe, retailers that the show would be opening for an extra hour on Saturday. And you know how retailers are going to feel. That's not what we signed up for.
No, they get, I remember I was at a Baltimore where there was a fake fire alarm or something, and
oh, yeah,
they stayed open later. And yeah, the then none of those people are ever happy with that news. They you're are
gonna,
ready to go home.
Yeah, you're going to work for an extra hour. And it's like some of them have reservations for like 8 o'clock, and now they're staying open till 8 o'clock. So, you know, they, you try to say, oh, this is for you, retailers. And I don't think they're all believing that it's for them.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, they can technically, I guess, sell more tickets. Like they do that midday. We added more tickets thing because they count the amount of people going in and out. But then every year people say, oh, you let too many tickets and people in, you oversold, you know, that sort of
I
business.
I saw something about they ran out of something, so they had to give wristbands or some. I don't know how the system works, but yeah, I did see some, as I said, the negative Nellies complaining about.
Yeah. And I did hear something about some escalator incident, but there's always the thing about there's only three escalators, right? So you all of them in one direction, or you have two going up, one going down, or like two going down, one going up. And then like they don't have them always set up going in the same direction. But when everyone's going basically in the same direction, I'm like, why don't they just put a third one going up or a third one going down? And then I'm thinking if there's an emergency and people are on the escalator, I'm like, you're not, I wouldn't imagine you'd be using the escalator, like bringing a stretcher up the escalator or something. Like there's other ways to get out of there. Like you think those other ways would be preferable. Who knows though, right?
They must have other, like you say, there's a way. It's just, yeah, we don't have any, this is it. But you know how those things go. It's always weird to figure out where people are going with the process and some of the, but there's always backstage and stuff. Backstage,
yeah.
It's a Disney term, but you know what I mean? There's, cause that's how the vendors and everything get in.
Well, yeah. And then there's stairs and elevators, yeah, and stuff like secret elevators,
freight elevators, all
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
Stuff.
So I don't know. It's and then there's just the design of the convention center where it's like big in one part and then they funnel everyone down into a narrow passage. And once panel rooms let out, you know, it gets crowded. Like, of course, I mean, I did want to see their retro arcade to see what games they had there, but I never got there. So I wanted to do like more things like that. But at least I got to a sketch duel. They were doing one day sketch duel after sketch duel after sketch duel. And we're like, wow, usually they have a few a day. And like there was one another day, but it was just like that one day you could just spend the whole day just seeing sketch duels if that's what you wanted to do, which I guess was exciting. I don't know.
I actually had a couple at the special edition in Anaheim. I didn't end up, I was flirting with it, but I didn't spend a ton of time at that show. I just kind of walked the floor and hung out a bit and got out. That was definitely not a, I think it was only there for a day or two, and that was like a one day show, but that's fine. Like they don't all need to be.
Yeah. I got a Exo Manowar sketch too.
Whoa. Nice. So who,
yeah.
So you got a page of art, a sketch. Who did the sketch?
Chris Campana.
Oh,
I have something. I have like the Man Thing and Citizen V from him. So, I mean, he's always entertaining, always a good guy to talk to. So I always pop by, see what's happening, see if he has any pages. But yeah, I didn't buy a lot of trades. That's just an ongoing thing, I think. Huge fan of the trade paperback anymore. Like single issues or hardcovers are my jam currently.
Look at you, Mr. Omnibus only.
It's how quickly you've abandoned the delightful joy we used to love with the epic editions, and now you're like, ain't got time for that garbage. No one wants those.
The epic editions are like the trade paperback I like. But other than that, I don't, just to buy a regular modern Marvel trade paperback, I'll never do that. I'll just get the single issues or the hardcover. I don't have much use for the regular trade paperback. You got to be epic edition, I guess.
Yeah, it's up rocks.
There was funny that there was nothing really available for people to get, but there was a huge Dandadan booth, I guess, corporate booth, I guess you could call it. I'm like, cool.
That does sound
cool. I know you're creeped out and you don't like Witch Hat Atelier, but man, the cosplay, there was a lot of cosplay for Witch Hat.
That's fine, as long as they're not cosplaying like little young girls and older men.
There was a lot of that. There's a lot of that. This is all you. You went down that direction.
I think if you've read the thing, it wasn't me that went down that direction.
You wrote the thing. I have not heard about this from anyone else.
Well, they're all cool with it, I guess. I don't know what crowds
you. It is with. Not there. you're on those fanfic websites that you should not go to.
I do not think that. I think it would have been easy to make her 18 and up or whatever, but I get it. It's part of the thrill.
I still hope that there's going to be more comic vendors every year at the show. I mean, there hasn't been regular corporate publishers for years. Like, they just do not show up. But there, you know, if you were into DC Comics, like, there was definitely a bunch of absolute line creators that you could all talk to, even if there's not a proper DC booth. So, I mean, all that stuff is good. But,
oh, that absolute stuff, it's fire, man. If you absolute Batman is selling for crazy amounts of money, and how new was that? You know what I mean? Like, it's not been out. What's it been out? 2 years, something like that.
Yeah, 2 years. I was just comparing it to the Ultimate line that was also came out firing.
It didn't come out this kind of firing though. It's crazy. You know, people were selling that thing for $400 or $500 or whatever.
Yeah.
Dang.
But what if they ended Absolute after 2 years, like Marvel ended Ultimate? That would be wild. But there's no way DC would do that.
They would be That's why it's wild that Marvel did it. I mean, everyone's in love with that thing.
Like, I know.
It'd be insane to be like, yeah, we're just going to, you know, it was a good run and all. No, they're never going
to
do that.
But isn't that secretly what people want? They're like, oh, we want people to tell their story and then stop it instead of it going on forever. Depends like, I'm people. Sure Absolute will just go on forever. And then at some point it will be less like, oh, they're still running it. Why are they still running? It's not good anymore. Like, that's where it's going to, almost guaranteed, that's where it's going to end up.
But you know, the speculators don't want that. They're
not going to stop that freight train.
No, but the speculators don't want that. If they close that thing down, it's going to not be a pop, you know, that'll be the end of the thing.
But isn't that what secretly people want, that when the story is over, when you're servicing the readers, not the speculators?
So I don't know.
The speculators want it to go on forever, but if they're like, well, we're done our story, close down the shop.
Seems like there's a lot more speculators than readers, I feel like.
I don't know. I always tell you that story about Marvel Unlimited, and there was like a million Jeff the Land Shark views. I mean, why would speculators go on there and pump the numbers for Jeff the Land Shark? I mean, I suppose it's possible, but it seems weird.
Yeah, I'm not saying that all of them are that, but I definitely think there's a lot of speculators in the Batman business. It seems like there's just too much cash changing hands. You know what I mean? Maybe I'm the crazy one, but I'm like, how is that not being speculator driven? especially because everyone's all these people are grading them right away and everything. That to me is the other sign, personally, when it's a lot of graded books on it. Yeah, because they want to read that comic, right?
I mean, they keep on doing new printings, et cetera, et cetera. Batman is Batman, though, always been. It's just like everyone, you know, the MCU is dead. I'm like, yeah, except for those movies that make $1 billion. I mean, sure, you might have more failures now, but if they get one that makes billions of dollars, that'll just encourage them to keep making them. When you say you don't like them anymore, you have to stop going to every movie. You can't say, oh, it's Spider-Man, I'll go and see that.
Well, they say that's a Sony movie.
You have to stop going to every single one, people.
And I don't really care. Like, look, you know, people got to make their money. Speculators got rent to pay and all that. I just feel like it seems, and I think it seems like they're a younger generation of the new speculators are out, you know. I mean, yeah, there's older people in it too, but I feel like it's brought a lot of young people in who want to get in on the ground floor and make big money. And I was there one time, Kevin. I've told you how many times have I told you how I bought every new universe title.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why you did that.
Because they made it seem like they were going to be good. And they weren't all bad. I mean, people bag on that thing, but they were fine. It just wasn't. I hadn't, you know, now it's the cycle of create a side universe. It does okay. And then get rid of it is well established. But that wasn't always the case. There was a time when you thought, oh, this is going to last. And you didn't know what was going to come or go. Now I'm pretty cynical. If it's Ultimate or Absolute, or it'll run for years and then it'll be done once it dips.
That's why I was so surprised Ultimate left after 2 years.
I mean, you know, they can't have everything run forever, Kevin, no matter how much you want it.
I guess so. I would have read more of that Spider-Man.
All right. So where are we at with... what else did you get at the show here? I don't want to get too...
Well, I ran into some dollar book booths, which is good because they're an endangered species, the dollar books. Like, one of my favorite memories for years was going to a booth, and even if it wasn't a dollar unless you bought a lot, like it was $2, I just love randomly going through, like, 100 boxes and just seeing what you could find. Or you could look at the top and you could see the older books, like the 70s or 80s, had a certain look from up top, and you could tell the newer books, you know, they look different.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So that was one of my favorite things, and that is no longer like at the show. Like, that booth has sized down to basically cut that section out.
Well, they're too expensive. Those 70s books now are too old to be. You're right. You used to find some crazy. I mean, they were beat up, but who cared? You know, we weren't all there because the condition mattered. We were there because it seemed like a cool book, and that's what we wanted.
Or then, like, the $2 books are now $5 books, and I'm like, but those books have to be in better shape, or I have to really be interested in those books.
Yes. And it's just, there aren't those glut of, like, weird old books anymore that used to be. But
I did find the dollar bin area, so I needed to spend more time on those areas, and I just didn't make the time, which is ridiculous. But, you know, I don't know.
It happens. Sometimes you ain't got the time or whatever. You don't need to. You know, there's only so much time, and you're smart to not. You don't want to spend, if the show gets too weird or too crowded or whatever, you're smart to be like, you know what, I'm going to bow.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely had other objectives, so that ran. The other thing is, traditionally I had a bigger breakfast and then I would skip lunch. But this time I went to some places for lunch, so, I mean, I don't regret that decision. But, it was different. because I didn't keep my usual schedule, so we'll see what happens next year. We'll see if I could. Well, I was also saving some vacation time is also nice too. After my other, they weren't con men adventures, but I guess they are comic traveling book man. Crawl Look at adventures.
You're a globetrotter. Yeah, you've got international concerns all over the place. You can't just be limited to one location.
This is true.
All right, so what's your conclusion? Fan Expo, greatest show ever, or second greatest show ever?
I mean, if those are the options, second greatest show ever. It's a spectacle, no doubt about it.
All right. Well, any last thoughts on the show, Kevin, now that we know it's a spectacle?
I thought it was funny that from the unseasoned perspective, they're like, there's a lot of loot boxes and Funko Pops. And then from my perspective, I'm like, there used to be more. Oof. This isn't that many anymore.
You know Andy and the mystery boxes.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing but garbage they couldn't sell.
Strangest mystery box I saw was the cat's mystery box and the knives mystery box.
Yeah, I don't know. So you get a bunch of knives? That sounds pretty cool.
I guess.
Or knife-themed stickers.
I don't know. Like, the people sell swords and stuff. So, I mean, maybe there's little knives in the... I don't want to know.
Yeah, good. All right, that's another show, I think, for Indie Comic Book Noise. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll hopefully keep cranking out the hits while we still got them. Kevin, are we doing catchphrases anymore? I don't know. Now that we own the show, I never know what we're doing anymore.
Visit more cons.
There we go. You heard it here first, folks. Thanks, everybody.